Right.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Love Fruit Podcast. I'm joined today by Erik Karlsson. Erik is a doctor of naturopathy and an expert in the subject of nature cure. He was a student of the legendary Australian teacher Kenneth Jaffrey, and he also founded what became the Danish Fresh Foods Festival. Eric, is there anything else you'd like to say about yourself as an introduction to yourself?
Yes, I was born in Sweden. I grew up here and I lived a quite a normal life till I was about 10 years when my thinking process sort of started. And a few things happened to me then, and I decided I will not eat meat anymore. And then followed an interest in health, sort of very slowly after that. I realized that there was additives in the food. I realized that sugar wasn't good, refined sugar. And so I changed my lifestyle gradually. And when I was 19, I came to a health center, which is in central Sweden, or was at that time, I should say. And at that time in the 70s, there was a lot of health centers in Sweden, at least 30 of them. And they were helping people with their health, and I would say in a very good way. So I looked into that, I found out. And then I thought, well, this seems to be the best one. And also it was one of the quite a few that didn't serve any dairy products. So that was also one reason why I went to this one. And I learned a lot in this place. And people came there and stayed for 11, 12 days, sometimes up to a month, and they changed their diet radically. And most guests did at least a week on just on liquids. So fresh juices and broth and green juices and carrot juice and that kind of things. And I could see amazing results. So I thought, oh, I better work with this in one way or another. Of course, there was no study I could do to learn exactly what they were doing there, but I did have the opportunity to learn a lot at that place. And I actually have a report on a scientific research that was made on this place on my webpage if you're interested in reading. And so, what am I doing next? I thought once I left there. And I started with doing a massage course. It's good to have some kind of a base. And in this period, I found out about naturopathy. And after the massage, I took a year off. I traveled a bit and I worked in another health center. And then I started to do naturopathy study. I started 1 year after that first massage study. And so I was finished there in 1983. And then a few years later, I came to Australia and I met Kenneth Jeffrey first time in 1985. So I studied with him, and he could really put words into explaining the healing process. So I thought, oh, this is really it. When I release books, wow, this is really good. No, I never seen anyone writing like explaining it like he did, and so it went on. So I did my study with him in the 80s and also in the 90s.
Excellent. I was wondering, what does the word naturopathy mean? Because
Yes,
it
it comes from.
sounds like naturopathy, but is it the same thing?
It's not. No, it doesn't get the same offer. Obviously, the last part of the word is from the Greek suffix, pathos. So that's the same. But napra comes from a Czech word, napravit or napraviti, which means to improve or correct or to fix. And the story behind is that Oakley Smith, who was one of the first students of D.D. Palmer in chiropractic, He did a study with him in 1899, and he was a guy who was never well himself, so he went to study chiropractic. He actually did a study with D.D. Palmer and became a chiropractor, and he couldn't find help with his own health problems. So that was the reason he went to see Palmer, and also he went to see Still, the founder of osteopathy. And he also actually wrote the first book of chiropractic called Modernized Chiropractic in 1906, together with two of his colleagues. And in 1907, he founded naturopathy, you can say, and after that, he was talking about naturopathy instead of chiropractic. And what's a little bit interesting, I think, is that the origin of both naturopathy and nature cure came from the same area almost, which is today's Czech Republic. Vincent Prisn is the founder of Nature Cure. He also lived in today's Czech Republic in Silesia, which was then a part of Austria. So he was a native German speaker. And when the Bohemians migrated to the United States, they had with them this technique where he learned from, and that probably D.D. Palmer also learned from, although I think he never recognized that. But so the Bohemian laymen, I suppose they were, I don't know exactly. That's where he took this, the thrust from, is the professional word.
And can we go further back than Vincent Prisnitz? Where did he learn from, or did he originate this information?
Yes, Prisnitz. Well, he was born on the countryside in a place called Grafenberg, near today's Jeseník in the north of Czech Republic, and he studied the animals, what they did when they were sick or injured, and then he applied the same principles as the animals did, and he found that they, if they are sick and injured, they don't eat, they rest, and they go and immerse in injured body part in water. So he used that method on himself by using water baths or water compresses. And when he was 16 or 17, he had a bad injury himself. And a doctor was called upon, and he said that Prisnitz would not survive. And if he would be an invalid for the rest of his life. But he started to, he actually lost his consciousness. And when he got it back, he started to use the cold compresses on his body. And in a few months, he pretty much recovered, except for that he lost some teeth in the accident. And then he started to treat his family and his neighbors. And then gradually, he became more very well known. And within a few years, he opened the first modern spa, you could say. And the people started to travel all over Europe. He was world famous. Americans came to Grafenberg to experience Prisnitz therapy. Also, very many well-known people, and he was treating the emperor's family and that kind of things.
Wow.
But when Prisnitz died, he was very much forgotten, and there could be several reasons for that. He didn't write and publish any books, and then Sebastian Kneipp came, born some years after him, and Kneipp was very well known, and he's very well known in Germany. In the German-speaking countries, everybody knows about him, I think, except that they may not know so much about him, especially the young people. So Kneipp became a lot more famous than and well known than Prisnitz did. But Prisnitz is you can say he's the originator of nature cure, of naturopathy, and of the spa movement.
And was that the
which
movement? Was that what?
spread, sorry, which spread a lot even during his own lifetime. It spread to France and America and other countries. Yeah, sorry.
And is that why, for example, there was this 30 healing centers in Sweden where they connected with that movement?
It's a good question. Very good question. Maybe there is a connection. We had some spas here in Sweden too in the 18th century, 19th century, I should say, sorry. And it could be possible that there is a connection there too, but we haven't got the sort of the history that the German-speaking countries have, and we don't know about priests needs. And like in Germany, there is more sort of alternative medicine on different methods that we it's not recognized here.
What, how would you define nature cure? What is the best way of explaining what that means?
Describing nature care. You could say that it's living according to the laws of nature. And of course, it has a philosophy that we should avoid the causes of disease. And if someone is sick, we have to try to find the cause of disease and then remove it and live according to the laws at the same time as we do natural therapies like naturopathy, for instance, or hydrotherapy to help enhance the healing powers.
So that's
Simply put. And also very important, I think, is to say that people are looking for healing in herbs and potions and medicines and drugs and all kind of things. But and you can see that because you can find books called healing herbs, healing foods, healing this, healing that. But there's only one healing power, and that's the healing power within. And any force from outside of the body can only provide favorable condition or unfavorable condition. But the healing power is only the one that you have inside of you. And you can call it different names, and we have a Latin name for that, and that is vis medicatrix natura, which you can translate into the healing power of nature. And what that really is, everyone should know it, but hardly anyone knows it. That's your metabolism. Your metabolism is the healing power. And what the metabolism does is to take the different materials that come into the body and turn them into your cells. The body is all the time building up new cells. The metabolism is working constantly from the day you're born and even before, and until the day you die, and even after, in fact. And this is called anabolism. There's building up processes. And then you have the other part of metabolism is called catabolism. And they are breaking down processes that break down your old cell that's leaving the body, getting rid of the toxins and substance that are not longer wanted by the body to keep us in health.
I'm interested in what you would see as the difference between nature cure and natural hygiene, which was also a big philosophy that still people talk about to this day. Do you think there's a big difference between those?
And yes, it's a good topic, I think. There are some differences, yes. Very much of the teachings of natural hygiene and nature cure is the same, and we can sort of read the same books. And I think there is not, strictly speaking, a line where you could say this is nature cure and this is natural hygiene. But I could say that as I have learned nature cure from Kenneth Jeffrey, which is not necessarily nature cure in India or in UK or somewhere. But as I have learned it, it's that wheat only fast people when they have a temperature. And we think that if the body temperature is normal, then you shouldn't fast. Or if it's below normal, I should say, too, then the patient is not ready to fast. It's better to build up the vitality by healthy living, natural therapy, and wait for the temperature to come and then fast them. Saying that, we could sometimes fast people for short periods, but not long periods. Then we're talking just about a few days. So that's one, that's the most important difference, I could say. But I mean, the other difference is that we use natural therapies. And as Herbert Sheldon taught natural hygiene, he didn't really do that, and others didn't. But strictly speaking, it was also not so, because my colleagues corresponded with Sheldon, and he could say, well, in that case, it could be okay to make a compress or make a manipulation or something like that. So Sheldon was maybe also not 100% right in this sense. And we also use our diagnosis that the hygienists don't use. Yeah, that could be maybe the most important differences.
Going back to the temperature thing, why do you wait until the temperature rises, until the person has a fever to fast?
Yeah, that's because, as I mentioned about the metabolism before, when the temperature rises, then the elimination of toxins increases. So healing is a lot faster when you have a raised temperature. So, and if you have a low temperature, you're not able to eliminate the toxins like that. So instead, live healthy, raise the temperature, do the fasting when the temperature goes above 37 degrees Celsius or 98.6 Fahrenheit.
And yes,
That's a
so,
simple explanation.
and what's the idea with like the hydrotherapies? How do they work?
The hydrotherapy is also increasing the circulation. I could say maybe before I say that is that nerve energy is fundamental for our health. And nerve energy is those impulses that comes from our brain and goes out to all the parts of the body through the nervous system. And without nerve energy, we don't exist. We can't live. We are totally dependent on that. And that is also influencing the circulation. Without nerve energy, no circulation. And another way of helping the circulation is to use cold water on the body. And what happens if you do that is that the body is producing a response. It's increasing the circulation in the tissues. And circulation is also extremely important for all health. Without circulation, we also can't live. So the healing process is quicker when you use hydrotherapy, provided that, of course, you use it in the right way. And I said cold water. Prisoners were using just about only cold water or tepid water. But you can also use warm. But if you use warm water, you should always finish off with cold water. And it's also important to say that how you use hydrotherapy, how cold the water can be, and how long you apply it to a body part is very, very individual. So the patient is like the monitor. The patient has to feel. How does that feel? You can't do it the same on everyone. That's very important to know when you use hydrotherapy. Too much cold water could also harm. So, and too much warm water, of course, could also harm. But hydrotherapy, it can be used in very many ways. And Prisnitz was describing a lot of different ways on how he was using it in different parts of the body. compresses and baths and over 100 different ways you can use it.
I'd like to hear more about Kenneth Jaffrey. How did you find him? What was it like working with him or learning from him? And could you tell us a little bit more about him and his life?
Yes. He was born in far north Queensland, or North Queensland, I should say, near Eyre. And he moved to Sydney when he was young. And when he was in Sydney, he was diagnosed by three different doctors with liver cancer. And he was tw 21 then, I believe. Some of my colleagues have said 23, but as I remember it, he said to me he was 21, although it's not so important. But anyway, so he basically went home to Ayr to die. And when he went to Ayr, he was one day in his brother's shop, and there was a guy coming in there who found out that Jaffrey was very sick. And he said, "I have a book here. You might want to read it." And it was a book by Professor Edmund Serkei. And he read it, and he said, "Oh, I'm going to try this. I have nothing to lose." So he changed his lifestyle completely. And when he had a fever, he fasted for 49 days. And then he broke the fast, and he was living in Ayr, and there's an area still well known, I think, for its pineapples. So when he broke the fast, he broke the pineapples. He was eating one pineapple a day for 49 days, and he recovered. And he decided to dedicate his life for nature care, and so he did. And then he got in contact with Professor Secke. This was before World War II. And they corresponded a lot for, I think, about 8 years. And then they lost contact during World War II. And that got Jeffrey really started. And he was the kind of person who could learn things by himself. Amazing brain, very, very amazing. And Seke gave him a good start. And he went back to Sydney and he started to practice. And he also got to work at Hopewood Health Centre, which is a health centre started by the health movement in Australia, not far from Sydney. And when he got older, he moved back to North Queensland, and he lived on Magnetic Island, where I met him in 1985. And yes, we had many fantastic conversations. I don't know where to start with that or what to tell you, but he, like I said before, he could really explain things that other people couldn't explain. About natural healing, and he didn't know things that I doubt many other people know. And when I found out about the fever and the healing crisis, I thought, oh, well, that explains everything. There have been questions that I had in my mind for quite a few years about what we call the acute and the chronic disease, which is very central in nature care. So acute disease is when the temperature is about 37 degrees Celsius. So it made total sense to me. So and Jeffrey passed away in 1998, I think it was. And so
98.
I
So
had known them for
what
13
age?
years.
What age was he then?
He was 89.
89, and diagnosed with liver cancer at 21.
Yeah, he was supposed to die. Liver cancer is 21. So he did quite well, I think.
Yeah, he's someone that I've never known a lot about, but I've been interested in him, and you used to bring some of his books and like pamphlets to the Danish festival.
Oh,
So he did a 49-day fast, was it you said? And then
yeah,
you
he did.
I
Yeah, he did. Yeah, 49-day fast, he did.
and then he ate pineapples.
Yeah, for 49 days more.
49 days more. Well, Interesting.
One
Interesting.
pineapple a day. Yeah.
So what was his, I mean, did he have a, was that his work? Like he had a practice, he had patients, he had clients. Did he
Yes.
teach? Did he give lectures? How did all that work? What was his
Yes.
hobby?
Lectures. He actually delivered 3,333 lectures. He must have counted them all because that's what he told me. And mainly when he lived in Sydney. When he moved back to Townsville, he was also running a practice, but I think most of his professional life he spent it in Sydney. And he was also involved in Natural Health Society and delivered lectures there too. And he was also the president of the Anti-Fluoridation Committee, I think it was called, when he lived in Sydney. Yeah. So that
Interesting.
was another thing he was working with.
And did you see him speak a lot?
If I saw him speak, was that what he said? No, unfortunately not. But I've heard of people who saw him speaking. And actually, within a few days after I came back to Europe in 1999, I met a Swiss woman who heard him speaking in Sydney. She was living there. And she said, "Oh, there's little guy, but he could really speak." She said he was a really fantastic speaker, and I can understand that because I've heard him speaking. He can go on. He can just talk. And so I can understand that. And I've heard others too saying he was a fabulous speaker.
So, were you a friend of his, or did you take a course with him? How did you actually meet him?
Well, I took contact with him. When I found out about him, and there was one of his friends who lived near Sydney, George Lupke was the name, and through her, I think it was, I found out where he lived, and then I took contact with him. First time I spoke to him, I talked to him, I rang him up. It was actually strange because I wrote him a letter before and he never received it. And then I called him up and come and see me when you come to Townsville, he said. And I went over to the island and saw him there. And then we had a long talk, and he was just moving from house to house to his new study place, you could say, that he bought. So after that, I always saw him at in his new house there in Mandalay Bay, as it was called. So,
Did he grow
yeah.
any of his own food?
If he grow his own food,
Yeah, was he growing
did you say
the
that?
Did he grow
It's a
his
little
own
bit
food?
here. When I met him, not so much, just a little bit. He had a bit of a garden, but before that, he had another property where he grew fruit trees too. But that was years before that, so he didn't grow a lot of his food at that time when I met him.
I see.
No.
So
Yeah. I think that's a good thing to do, especially in this age. I grow most of my food myself,
do you?
and it's really important, I think. Grow all the poisons in the atmosphere and everywhere. At least you can minimize your both your environmental impact and the poison you get into yourself. If you grow them yourself, you get better quality.
So when did you sort of start to change? What stage in your life did you start to change your lifestyle, your diet? What influenced you? What have you experimented with, and what's your lifestyle like now?
I should turn on the light. Well, my first change was when I was 10, when I stopped eating meat. And I didn't do any other changes right then. But like I said, it came slowly. I stopped. The problem with additives. I realized that the food was sprayed and fertilized with chemicals. And then I found out, well, there was something called health food shops. And when I was 12, actually found a very small health food shop in the little town that I lived in. So then I started to go doing my shopping there for 4 years after that, at least. And my diet was not very healthy at all. I was living mainly on muesli. Not very healthy at all. But when I came to that health center, as I told you about earlier, when I was 19, that's when I really realized, fresh food is the best. So that was the biggest change I made right then. But before that, I also started off eating organic foods, and but it was not so easy to get organic foods, and I didn't really want to buy things that were not organic. And then, as I lived in Australia, I started to eat more fruit for a while. And well, I was always eating more fruit when I lived in Australia than I do in this cold climate, basically. But I was eating almost exclusively fruit, or maybe 90% for a good while. But I felt better if I included more greens. I think it's better. And also a little bit more protein than I was eating at that time. So a bit more nuts and avocado and fat too. I suppose the last 30 years or so, I have only changed my diet according to the availability of it. So, and cold climate, you eat a little bit more rich food, warm climate, more fruit, more greens, also more sprouts in cold climate. That's another good option for winter time in Northern Europe.
Has it been a vegan diet primarily?
Yeah, when I was 14, I stopped with dairy the first time. I tried that for a while, didn't seem to be a problem, but when I was 16, I sort of thought, now is the time. I finished school, and I thought, this is the time. Now I give up the dairy. I didn't have any particular knowledge or particular reasons for it, other than that I thought, oh, maybe dairy. It's an animal product. Maybe I shouldn't eat that either. I didn't know anything about how they kept the animals or what the animals were eating and that kind of things. I didn't know anything about pasteurization at that time, I think. But I learned about the harmfulness of pasteurization later on, and homogenization too. So that was a few years later.
And has it been primarily or mostly raw diet, or do you not see that
Yes.
being?
Yes. Since I was 19, primarily raw. Yeah.
Oh,
So
wow.
maybe 95% raw, 100% raw in periods, like now in Sweden. Still mainly raw and fresh foods, but in the winter I did some cooked foods too.
Okay. And you have helped with the event, starting events and festivals. You started the event that became the Danish Fresh Food Festival. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, it's sort of started in this house in a way, because I invited some people to come. And I think I met 15 people, and I think about 10 or more came. And then I started to present my idea to them, to the others, and Peter and Laura, and Annette was here. And the following year we had a festival in Sweden, and then Peter and Laura took it over to Denmark the year after that. So yeah, it's I think quite a lot of people have been there, and hopefully got inspired to live on fresh foods. I think
Well,
so.
that's how I met you. I saw some of
Yeah,
your presentations there,
that's right.
over a number of years.
Yeah.
When did you start to help people then? When did you start to give people advice and help them and put your own information out there? And what have you done to share that with others?
I started seeing patients after I'd done massage course, and I suppose occasionally I gave them some other advice too, but because I did learn a lot about it from that health center. But after I finished my studies in 1983, then I started to give more advice on health in my practice. And after I finished my study with Kenneth Jeffrey, of course I could do that even more than I had a sort of official qualification in Nature Cure too. So I always combine my clinical practice in Nature Cure and naturopathy. In Australia, Nature Cure is more known, naturopathy is not known, so I had more Nature Cure patients coming there. And here, naturopathy is quite well known, so people come mainly for naturopathy. But I have also been teaching courses, and I've been lecturing too. And I spread the articles are written to my patients and other people interested, people who write to me. And I also spread Kenneth Jeffrey's articles and books for people who contact me and so on. Yeah. And
What do you find are the
so
main
I've lectured actually.
What do you find are
Sorry.
some of the what do you find are some of the mistakes people tend to make when they're trying to adopt a nature cure lifestyle?
That's a good question, I think. Yeah. Well, one thing I've seen with people who eat fresh foods, who eat a lot of fruit, I should say, is that many of them destroy their teeth. I also made a mistake. I was eating too much fruit and in the late 80s, I was eating fruit, and fruit was not always ripe. I lived in the subtropics, and in the winter, fruits was not always quite ripe. And that's something you really should avoid, to eat unripe fruit. And for instance, pineapples and citrus, very acid. You can destroy your animal. And another mistake is to eat too much of this sweet fruit. If you have a good heredity, perhaps with your teeth, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe you can be okay to eat all the tropical fruit and so on, which is very sweet. But I don't think it's really good. I think it's better to eat a more mixed diet. You eat fruit which are not so strongly sweet and not so strongly acid. I think it's better. And when you eat the very sweet fruit, especially tropical fruits, that you don't eat too much of it. That's just a part of your diet. I have seen some really bad cases with people destroying their teeth on fruit. And even on the festivals, I met people who got to talk to that, and I lectured about that too, how you can keep your teeth healthy on a fresh food diet. It's really good to be careful, because if you lost your tissues, they likely won't come back, your tooth tissues. If there's something wrong with the rest of the tissues in the body, they can usually heal, but with the teeth, it's not that easy. So that's an important one. And I think also that there can be other imbalances. People who eat mainly fresh foods, well, they don't tend to overeat maybe so much on protein and nuts and that kind of things. That can be a mistake. But there are also those who say, no, we shouldn't eat the nuts, and we should live on fruit. I don't think so. I think it's good to eat some nuts and seeds. And some people, they just don't have enough energy. And that can be because they have avoided to eat nuts and seeds. And I've also met people who eat an incredible amounts of avocado. That's also not so good. Balance, I think, is the key word for health in general. You have to strive after balancing your life and also in your diet. Include the green vegetables, I think, is very important. And then, especially if you live in Northern Europe and cold places, to include carrots and root vegetables in the wintertime at least.
Okay. So how can people find out more about you if they would like to get in touch or find out more about your articles and so on?
They can send me an email and they can also visit my web page. I have a couple of web pages and I have an, I can show it. It's easier if I show it, I suppose. You see it there?
Selfhealing.eu.
And I have another site which finishes SE instead of EU. And that EU site is a multilingual one. Unfortunately, there's a lot of problem with them, but the English page I hope will be updated very soon.
Well, thank you very much, Eric. Is there anything you'd like to say before we finish?
Well, if someone is interested in nature cure and self-healing, just send me an email. Naturecure at mailfence.com. You will also find that on my webpage, the mail address. Just send me an email and let me know what I can help you with.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you very much, Eric. And thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. And we'll see you in another episode of the Lovefoot Podcast.